For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
What is up, everybody? Thank you all for joining me in the latest Morecast, part of the CSG Network. I'm, of course, your host, Jeff Morton. You know, I've got a two-pronged podcast today, and one of them is about how the Nuggets since the All-Star break, the 11-1 Nuggets since the All-Star break, have sent a message to the NBA. And in the second half, I'm going to kind of have a personal rant about the people who have been loudly proclaiming in the past that this is the NBA's offensive explosion was on all skill, and how they were completely ignoring the rules. So, but we'll get to that in the second half. The Nuggets are 11-1 since the All-Star break. Last night they beat the San Antonio Spurs and Victor Wembanyama. And look, that's not surprising. The Spurs, even with Wembanyama, are not good. They do not have much talent on that roster. I don't think it has anything really to do with coaching. People point at Greg Popovich a lot. What I saw last night was an extremely talent-deficient team that just had a great player on it. And even with that Wembanyama, with as much skill as he has, he really does need a couple years in the league to really make the leap. I mean, just like every other player that comes into the league, there's a lot of things. Last night I described it as seasoning. And definitely Wembanyama needs some more seasoning on him, but he will undoubtedly be a great player when he gets that. And the league isn't ready for that. I mean, that's 100%. He is a once in a lifetime kind of player. But the Nuggets went to 11-1, and you know, one of the things that has happened is that if you listen to a lot of the national podcasts, there has been this a realization of how the Nuggets are just proving a point. And a lot of the great teams in the past kind of had these moments where they're like, oh, okay, we're going to, you know, even the Warriors, they would go through lulls and then suddenly, especially during the Durant years, they would have a lull and then go on a big streak and basically prove exactly why they were the best team in basketball. The Nuggets are doing very similar. And it's, look, people are overcrediting the Jokic text. I honestly think that the Nuggets just collectively decided, oh, okay, we're done kind of fucking around. You know, pardon my language. But that's basically what happened. The Denver Nuggets kind of just were like, all right, we're kind of done cruising through the season. A lot of this was schedule dictated. The Nuggets' schedule to start the year was insane. Playing so many back-to-backs in the front part of the year was just, I've never seen anything like that outside of a strike year or a lockout year. You know, the Nuggets played a lot of games on the road before and done things like that, but never had that many, as far as I can recall, that many back-to-backs front-loaded into the first part of the year. And a lot of it is because they had to jerry-rig in that stupid tournament that they, the in-season tournament that Adam Silver wanted. But all that aside, the Nuggets came into the year, and once the schedule loosened up, they became, you know, obviously started. It was really started in January. Nuggets started winning more games, and, you know, they would get their lulls, but they would start, you know, winning more consistently. And I predicted that would happen all the way to last year. What has happened since the All-Star break, and this is very important to take into context, the Nuggets have played a lot of statement games and a lot of games against opponents that are going to ostensibly tough, you know, Boston. They played, who else have they played? You know, they played Phoenix, and it clearly they were looking past Phoenix. I mean, that was what, not a clearer example in the world of the Nuggets looking past the Phoenix Suns, plus Grayson Allen hitting 8 three-pointers in a row. That shit's not going to happen again. You know, Grayson Allen's a better three-point shooter this year, but that's not going to happen again. But the Nuggets have, you know, since the All-Star break, just, you know, they're beating the Heat twice. You know, they're going to be taking on the Mavericks tomorrow. The Mavericks may or may not have Luka. We don't know at this point. But the Nuggets really have just gone into point-proven mode. And they just have just systematically, outside of the Phoenix game, just said, like, okay, we're better than you. We are better than you. We are better than you. This is exactly how we're going to prove it. And that's it. And like I said in a couple podcasts ago, if you have the best player, generally you're going to win. And, you know, you can, not to throw the Lakers under the bus, but why not? It's the Lakers. You can tell LeBron's not the best player in the world anymore because he can't lift a team anymore. And this is 100% true. He can't put a team on his back. And clearly Anthony Davis can't do it. So this is the problem the Lakers are facing right now, is that LeBron is 40. And that's just something that happens. Now, the statement also applies to the Oklahoma City Thunder and the Minnesota Timberwolves. And the Nuggets haven't played the Thunder since, I think it was January was the last time they played the Thunder. And every time they've played the Thunder, they've been down a guy. And on second night of a back-to-back, it was one of those cards stacked against them, the deck stacked against them kind of series this year. And that's happened before. Last year, when the Nuggets played the Timberwolves in the regular season, it was always on the second night of a back-to-back. It was the weirdest thing. I don't think I've ever seen anything like that before. Like, one team you would always get on the second night of a back-to-back, and Nuggets won one out of three. Well, in this instance, the Nuggets won one out of three against the Thunder, and there was always, you know, Jamal's out, Jokic is out, or it's the second night of a back-to-back. There's just all these things that were mitigating circumstances for that. With the Timberwolves, the Nuggets haven't played the Timberwolves since the first week of the season. And the Timberwolves have, since their schedule has toughened up, have been a lot less potent than they were before. Plus, they've faced some injuries, and Karl Anthony Towns is out. So there's all those things going on at once here. But more than anything else, the Nuggets going 11-1 since the All-Star break, as of this recording, sending a message to the Timberwolves and the Thunder. It's just like, okay, yeah, all right, playtime's over, essentially is what it is. And I think a lot of the narrative and all this stuff going on around these other two teams has been because the Nuggets were just kind of taking the, I wouldn't say they were taking it easy, but they weren't putting their whole ass into it. They were kind of half-assing the regular season up to then. And then Jokic and the rest of the guys after the All-Star break says this is it. And I really do think the Nuggets needed that rest. Even Jokic, I mean, I wouldn't call what he did at the All-Star break exerting himself. So the Nuggets needed that break. And clearly before the break, they mentally checked out. So here's them saying, like, okay, pedal to the metal. We're going to go prove a point to you motherfuckers. And they have. So this whole thing, this whole message sending from the Denver Nuggets has been important for a couple of reasons. First and foremost, it serves to remind the people who cover the league that the Denver Nuggets are the best team in basketball. And number two, it kind of sends a message to the Thunder and the Timberwolves, who are really the two in this picture for the top seed, because the Clippers have fallen way back. The Clippers are 4 games behind the Nuggets right now. And at one point, I think before the All-Star break, the Clippers were ahead of the Nuggets. So that tells you how these things have flipped. What has happened is the Nuggets have sent a message to these two teams that they are competing with for the first seed, and like, we're still the best team in basketball. And that psychologically, particularly in a league that is it is so based in narrative, has been absolutely key. And with the, and I'll get to this in the second half, but even with the foul emphasis changing that has gone on since before the All-Star break, the Nuggets have still thrived, and a lot of that has to do with their mid-range shooting and all that stuff. And I've gone over that before in previous podcasts. You can check them out. So the message sending has been important, and it's a psychological thing. And I think with the Thunder being extremely young and the Timberwolves not exactly being a battle-tested playoff team, you can tell that this is something that where the Nuggets have decided to put the pedal to the metal and go into it. And like I said, you could tell that the national media has taken notice of the Nuggets just kind of flipping the switch, which is something that is pretty common for teams that have won championships, is that they just know what it, and I've described it as we know what it takes, therefore the regular season doesn't matter. LeBron James teams have gone through that, multiple teams, and I always compare this Nuggets team to the Shaq Kobe Lakers. This is the closest I can, I mean, we're not talking about play style here, but the Nuggets do play a lot of triangle, but I mean, this isn't, the rules are different than they were back in 2000, 2001, during their three-peat. But this Nuggets team is closer to that team than they are to the Spurs. This Nuggets team, psychologically, emotionally, and the way they fit, aside from a feuding superstar thing that the Lakers had, I mean, really, this Nuggets team is very much closer to that the Lakers three-peat team. And that team and this Nuggets team had a switch. And when they just decided that they will be the best team in basketball, they were the best team in basketball. And that sort of thing is pretty amazing. It is one of those things that is indicative of teams that you know are going to be winning titles. One of the reasons the Spurs never had that thing is because Tim Duncan wasn't wired that way. And I think people kind of miss it when they desperately, it's the small market thing, I get it, but San Antonio is a significantly smaller market than Denver is. The notion that the Denver Nuggets and Tim Duncan, the Spurs and Duncan weren't able to repeat has a lot to do with Tim Duncan himself. The Nuggets and the Nuggets with Jokic are different. You can tell Jokic wants to win a title. I'm not saying that Tim Duncan didn't. He's a very competitive guy, but he was always willing to go with the flow a lot more than Jokic. Jokic just decides you're going to win, which is very different than Duncan. Duncan was really kind of going with what was going on with the Spurs at the time. He rode the organizational wave of the San Antonio Spurs, which is why they were never able to repeat. With the Nuggets, Jokic, you could tell, is just like, he's more similar to Shaq. Like, okay, play time's over. We're going to do this. And that's one of the things I love about Jokic. And I think that's where people have missed the boat. So the Nuggets have sent that message to the league. They have sent that message to the Thunder and the Wolves. Like, playtime is over. It's time to get serious. And the Nuggets are now at the best record they've had through 67 games than, I think, in their NBA history. I think this is the best. I mean, cause someone correct me if I'm wrong. JMorton78 on Twitter. This is the best record they've had in their NBA history through this point in time. And that's pretty amazing. Is it second to the 2013 team? It could be that. Anyway, this Nuggets team is special, and they have really shown exactly what it takes. Despite the fact that they have so much youth on the bench, something that I've been complaining about for so long. Sometimes when you, as I said before, you have the best player, and 9 times out of 10, when you have the best player, that means you are going to win. So, all right. And we're going to take a break. In fact, I will. Before I do, I will talk to you about Blanchard Family Wines, located between 18th and 19th and Blake and Muzzy in beautiful lower downtown Denver, Colorado. Just a couple blocks away from Coors Field, right in the middle of the dairy block. They're always online at bfwcolorado.com. And they're on Facebook and Instagram under Blanchard Family Wines. They got a great selection of reds and whites, and they got the rosés. You got the Rieslings from the western slope of Colorado, which is the grape of western Colorado. But one of the things I always talk about with Blanchard is it's just really friendly. It's a great atmosphere. It's a great location. The vibe of the dairy block is really cool. I prefer to go there when there's not Rockies events going on, because it's right next to Coors Field. But if you want to go to Coors Field, pregame it, maybe there's an afternoon game, hit Blanchard Family Wines up afterwards. It's it's one of the best places in Colorado to go, and it's one of those great wine bars located in lower downtown that really gives you that vibe. Pregame it, go have a glass of wine before you go to dinner. There's a bunch of great restaurants in lower downtown. You'll enjoy all of them. Once again, they're located between 18th and 19th and Blake and Wazzy in beautiful lower downtown Denver, Colorado, just a couple blocks away from Coors Field, right in the middle of the dairy block. They're always online at bfwcolorado.com. They're on Facebook and Instagram at Blanchard Family Wines. They got a location in Fort Collins, a location in Golden, and of course their original location in Sonoma County, California. When you go in or you talk to them, tell them Jeff Morton from CSG Podcast sent you.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
It was sometime in, I don't know, maybe about 2 months ago, I started debating with some people on Twitter about how the NBA has changed rules. And there is a significant pushback from nerd Twitter about how the NBA has evolved. And it can never be both. It's always one thing or another. And I've always said that the conditions that were set by the NBA changing rules is what allowed this particular skill explosion to happen. People need to understand this. Steph Curry would have been Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf if these rules hadn't changed, because he would have just been abused. If the rules, specifically the hand-checking rules, he would have been hand-checked into oblivion. And a lot of these rules changes were done for the betterment of the league. Very specifically, the hand checking, which was causing all outside shots that weren't mid-range to be inefficient. If you weren't wide open on a three-point shot, it wasn't a good shot. And I'm not going to go over the well-worn territory of me talking about the rules changes and how Shaq was the impetus of it and all this stuff. I will say this. What you have seen since the NBA realigned its emphasis with foul calling, you have seen scoring come down, you have seen three-point shots become more inefficient, and you have seen basically what I have been saying for so long now, and I hate being a person who says, I told you so, but I told you so. The rules are what dictate how the game is played and the way, quote-unquote, skills evolve. And this notion that people who played in the 90s weren't skilled is stupid as hell. It was just different. It was a different set of skills. You had to do different things in the 90s. You had to do different things in the 80s and the 70s and the 60s. You had to play a certain way because of the way the game was legislated, so to speak. And what you have seen since the NBA has redone its rules is the scoring come down. And what you're seeing is like probably an exaggeration of certain things, but the NBA very clearly was embarrassed. And I think the nadir was the All-Star game. And Look, I don't give a shit about the All-Star game. I never have. People overreacted to that. I just don't understand that sort of thing. But in the lead up to it, it was a culmination of things that were happening. Now, the NBA, obviously, and if you look at the way the stats have gone, started calling less fouls prior to the All-Star break. It didn't hit its apex until after these 12 games after the All-Star break. So it was, you know, the NBA saw these high 150 to 150-something games. They were seeing these 70-point games, which I don't, as I've said before, the NBA didn't care as much about the individual thing. It was the high-scoring overall teams' games that was really starting to embarrass them. And it was also these games were getting to be almost 3 hours long. The people were tuning out. The NBA is smarter than people, I think, want to realize. I think people believe that the NBA just kind of is attuned to just marketing, and they not. They do pay attention to what people say, and it's not just in social media. They do pay attention to what people are saying outside of it. And people were turned off by the way the league was. It was offense was seen to be too easy. And I've said over and over on this very podcast, that sort of thing was eventually going to catch up with the NBA. And they knew it. And it was the players not playing, and they started addressing that with the 65-game rule. And it was also the scoring. Scoring became too easy. But it was more the fouling, and it was more the length of games. And you've noticed that these games have been, as far as I'm concerned, the style of play since the NBA changed this has improved dramatically. It reminds me of the 2008 to about 2012 style. Before the Heat and the small ball and thing took over, and then the Morey thing, before that really started taking root in the NBA, you're seeing, I wouldn't call it balance, but since they are allowing more what I would call benefit of the doubt to defensive players, you're seeing three-point shots become less efficient. And the teams that are benefiting are not the more physical teams. The teams that are benefiting are the ones that have more mid-range shooters. And you notice the Nuggets haven't missed a beat. The Nuggets actually probably are benefiting from this, and it's because the Nuggets have Michael Porter Jr., Jamal Murray, and Nikola Jokic in their starting lineup. And all three of those people can hit great. I mean, Jokic and his floaters, Jamal and Porter with their mid-range shots. These have benefited the Nuggets, but it's benefited in style of play. Absolutely everyone I've spoken to loves this right now. There seems to be a less of the cartoonishness that the NBA had devolved into. It was very cartoonish. And I don't think it's not a blame the players situation. What has happened is the NBA decided that this was enough. Enough was enough, and this is how they're going to go, and it has helped. And I think the people who are insistent that it's entirely skill-based the way the NBA is. Look, scoring is still scoring. I mean, it's not people thinking, oh my God, we're going to return to the 90s. I mean, like, people misunderstand that the first half of the 90s is not the same as the second half of the 90s. The second half of the 90s is what they remember. The first half of the 90s was actually pretty fucking good. Probably one of the best eras of basketball. But it's the second half of the 90s that got awful, and what they remember. That's, and the NBA is never going back to that, folks, so you don't need to worry about that. But it had reached a point where the rules and the evolution of how the players play within those rules had become cartoonish. It become, as I've always said, it was a funhouse mirror. The NBA was a giant funhouse mirror, and it had become way out of proportion. completely out of proportion what was happening in the league. So coming back to this, I think people need to understand that everything emanates from rules and emphasis and the way games are officiated. Everything does. Absolutely. Style of play, skill set, everything begins with that. And then players evolve within that construct. And the people who have said to me very loudly over and over that it's just player evolution and players are more skilled and you are just missing the boat. Yes, players are probably much more skilled than they were in the 90s. I mean, we can go without saying. But they're growing within a construct of the way the NBA was officiated, particularly the last 10 years or so, with the benefit of the doubt going always to the shooter and the juicing of the offense and all that stuff was throughout the NBA. What this is doing right now is allowing these players who have certain skill set to adapt and probably diversify their offensive game, which is only to the benefit of the players and only in a benefit to the league. The lack of well-roundedness in the league and everything resulting in a three. I mean, look, the Boston Celtics still chuck about 53s a game. In fact, they against the Suns, they hit 25 of 53s. All right. That's not going to stop them. But for the rest of the league, and if you don't have a team that your offense is entirely based on that sort of thing, you are going to be having to adapt to a certain set of circumstances. And the ones that have mid-range shooters, look at the Chicago Bulls, okay? There's no reason this Chicago Bulls team should be anywhere remotely close to the play-in tournament in the East. They have DeMar DeRozan, who is a deadly mid-range shooter. And when you have that sort of thing and you have that kind of offense, your games are going to be closer, but you're going to have a closer at the end. And look at the Denver Nuggets. They got closers. They got guys who are going to hit these tough shots that were ostensibly more inefficient. But now that the three-point shot has become more inefficient due to the way the NBA has emphasized the rules, things shrink. The court is shrinking. Again, but the shrinking of the court encourages offensive diversity. And that, my friends, is where the NBA got it right. And the players are allowed to grow their skills within that and make it more diverse than it has been. No longer are you able to drive a semi-truck through the lane because one thing I've noticed, and this is anecdotally, this is just my observation. I have noticed a significantly less amount of defensive 3 seconds called. Watch these games and see how it's going to, and look at it this way. It looks like you're going to have to be in the lane for 5 seconds in order for the league to call it right now. It has to be egregious. And that is very key. This is anecdotal. I don't have the stats to back that up, but it seems to me like the league is not calling defensive 3 seconds as much as it used to, which means the lane is more closed off, which means the whole freedom of movement thing is not as emphasized as it was before, and the league is saying we're compacting the court, which encourages offensive development. It encourages diversity, which is what I have been banging the drum about for ages. We should all be looking at these rules and saying, yes, rules first, foul and emphasis, quote unquote, is what the NBA is calling it right now. Emphasis first, development comes out of that. And this is what we need to start talking about on Twitter and in NBA Twitter and in circles around the league. It is not the players dictating this. It is the rules and players conforming to what the rules dictate. All right, thank you all for joining me on the Saturday Morecast. I'm going to be back Monday with another episode. Goodbye.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile. And the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
With the McDonald's app, you can get your favorite thing delivered to your door. So if you were looking for a reason to skip washing those dishes you left in the sink, consider this a sign. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Right now, get $0 delivery fee with any purchase of $15 or more, only in the app. At participating McDonald's, minimum purchase excludes tax and service fees. Delivery prices may be higher than in restaurants. Other fees may apply, not valid with any other offer, discount, or coupon.